gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes, it is. This show shut down? No. Full steam ahead today. We have a sec. What? Actor Sean Astin is. Sean Astin on the big show today. Rudy. What's the other thing from the movies we don't watch? Right.
And the Walter Gunner from Memphis Belle.
Hot Bree, Melissa Fitzgerald, live in studio with the director of the new WikiLeaks movie, Jim. Have you been seeing the promos all over the place? And hour number three, Sexy Liberal Hal Sparks. We have a huge, huge Sexy Liberal announcement on Friday. Yeah.
Every time I see Steph's face, it reminds me of a Sexy Liberal Show. But all I've got is an Instagram of her chunking up in my mouth I want to throw. I thought I'd make it to the end of the show, okay? But she's half naked through the teabagging display.
Another power of the Stephanie Miller Show. Rocky Mountain Mike, congratulations. His new comedy CD, number one.
That's right.
Cool.
He just our guest yesterday. Congratulations to our friend Mike. Speaking of our friends, why, look who's here live in the studio. Why, I've just been searching everywhere for his jingle. There it is.
Coffee. I took it back, like my man.
Coffee with Carlos sells Rocky.
I'll have a Zimbabwe latte.
I'll have a Kenya cappuccino.
Jim never has a second cup of coffee at home.
Mountain-grown coffee.
Carlos sells Rocky.
I was going to make espresso.
And picked by Juan Valdez.
Coffee with Carlos.
Good to the last drop.
Good morning, Carlos sells Rocky.
Buenos dias, Juan Valdez.
I could see that bit made you and Jim start to do dueling Beatles like you used to do back in the day.
That's right. Instead, it's government shutdown show number nine.
Number nine.
Government shutdown number nine.
Good morning. How are you enjoying your shutdown?
Political discourse is dead.
Yes, exactly.
What are you doing?
I don't know.
What's
Jim
going on?
Has his.
I don't know.
He's watching. His porn is still up.
I brought up an article, and suddenly the sound came on.
Girls gone liberal.
Good morning, Carlos El Rocky.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Your thoughts on the state of our government and here in America?
You know what? The House of Representatives is basically like Lucy holding the football, and Obama's going, nope, not going to fall for it. Not going to kick it. I won't pull the ball out this time. No.
Not
the
my
House
game.
House of Representatives is Walter White, still addicted to power. And Obama's like, yo, bitch, I thought we were done with this cooking of politics.
I haven't even seen Breaking Bad, and I know the reference.
Yes. Clean bill, bitch.
Well, you have a toddler, but she does not seem prone to tantrums. But this is what it feels like. We're just waiting for the final spin in the Walmart parking lot.
I'm not going to sit down with the president. I've nothing to say to him. This bastard. He knows what he did.
It was the president's fault. My daughter says go to way when she's mad. Go to way. So Bader's basically saying, go to way.
That's adorable.
Let's vote. There's 218 votes there and probably growing by the minute.
Yeah. Well, except I don't know. You know, that's the problem is that we were saying that I think our friend Joan Walsh wrote a great piece in Salon about, just the cowardice of this whole party, how they're cowed by the Tea Party. And on the floor, will they? Will they publicly take a stand or will they,
Ted Cruz is their Willy Wonka. He's their man limping with a cane. Listen to me. Hold out.
Yeah,
Joan, do not give in.
Joan Walsh writing, GOP cowards face biggest test of their self-inflicted mess. And she's nervous. I mean, and so am I, because it just, I think we have never seen the likes of this. And so it's hard. It's anybody's guess how this plays out.
They're sort of figuratively suicide bombing the mm-hmm. whole process.
Oh, now you're going to get me back in trouble again.
Yeah, thanks.
I've just spent an entire week. Because I made Newsbusters and we're and also Hannity on Fox. Right, because I said politically they are suicide bombers.
Oh, so they didn't get the metaphor.
Right. No.
No.
So you're saying they're like terror, you're calling
you
Ted Cruz
right.
a terrorist Muslim.
The chyron apparently was Stephanie Miller says GOP wants to blow your children up.
Oh. Now, yeah. If you were talking about gay marriage, that would be a whole nother
right.
thing.
Right, exactly. But anyway, that's what I mean. It's just who's the guy they were quoting yesterday, the Republican who can tell the doofuses apart now? But he was the one that said, "I think a default will bring stability to the markets."
Oh yeah.
Oh the guy from Texas,
the cow doctor. God. He's a cow doctor. Seriously.
The guy from Texas that said, "Look, we pay some bills on time,
right.
and some we just ignore, and then we
right.
pay other bills, and then we put a bill up, and there's a guy named Bill." It's like Mr. Douglas. Well, Mr. Haney, sometimes we can't pay the bills, Mr. I am loading down this segment of voices. I got an hour.
Listen, you packed an hour into just the first 5 minutes.
Pay your bills, bitch.
I think it was Chris Hayes last night, but it was funny. You had the, just, you know, attention, everybody. Your family budget is not like the United States. It's not the same thing.
Yes. Sometimes I put crackers in my son's lunchbox and don't put crackers in my daughter's lunchbox.
Stop with your folksy analogies. This is right. This is a worldwide economic system. It's a little more complicated than...
Economy, schmeconomy.
Yeah.
We'll be fine.
Yeah, let me just say, a lot of those people, a lot more attractive. So the electricity company shut the lights off. Just saying. Just saying.
Even some on our side.
Yeah, well, right. But primarily I'm talking about... That guy from Texas.
Yeah.
What's his name? Blake somebody? Fernald.
Is it Blake
that
Fernald?
Guy?
Oh, well.
That guy. Doesn't he look like the John Candy character in Splash? He looks... Right? Just even like as a kid. Like as a kid, he's a full-grown adult, but he looks like the child version of John Candy.
He looks like the John Candy character in National Lampoon's Vacation.
Yeah. Oh.
What was the character? Somebody sent us the thing of when, after the shutdown about, you know, no, folks, we're all shut. Moose out front should have told
Moose
you.
That's the John Candy you. Character in
yeah.
Vacation. Yes.
Sorry.
Moose out front should have told you we're shut down here.
World War II memorial's closed, but Obama's sponsoring a Muslim museum.
Oh,
personally.
That... That woman
oh my
on
God.
Fox
Hip-hop barbecue.
Sucker.
Excuse me?
No, the
oh,
Fox
pardon me.
Story that was reported about Obama out of his own pocket.
Right.
Funding a Muslim
using
museum.
Muslim dollars.
Right.
A Muslim.
He gave them all free carpets.
It's always the most hilarious thing when they have to apologize. And you have the quote-unquote journalists at Fox News.
I'm sorry if anyone was
offended,
morons.
I'm sorry if I reported as fact a parody. Story.
Who knew the Onion wasn't a legitimate paper?
My favorite part of the apology, she said this won't happen again. Yes, it will.
Yeah.
It's Fox News.
Yeah.
It'll happen again this week.
It'll happen weekly.
Half an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. What time is it? Of course it'll happen again.
This won't happen again to me in the next 10 seconds.
This is what we're up against. Arizona lawmaker refers to Obama as the Fuhrer on Facebook.
Absolutely, he's the Fuhrer.
Sure.
Like many Republicans.
Like Jesse Owens was the Fuhrer.
What?
And wouldn't,
right.
Wouldn't shake Hitler's hand.
Right.
Arrogant bastard.
Right. Like many Republican lawmakers, Brenda Barton, please and thank you, furious that the federal government shutdown has forced the closure of national parks. This is just a comedy sketch. God. They're the ones that shut it down, and then they're there going, what the hell's going on here?
What happened?
You should be ashamed of yourself that you've shut down this park.
Lost the election twice.
Rangers don't have the authority to shut down the park.
Yeah. Barton, an Arizona state representative. Oof, they're just peaches, all of them in Arizona.
God.
Gee, Yogi, we can't go back in the park. The House of Representatives won't sign a clean bill.
I think we should maul them.
I could clean a bill like I'm going to clean this picnic basket.
I love it when you two are in here together.
We're professional voiceover actors.
Yes.
I know. It's like this cacophony in my headphones. Yes, she took to Facebook to express her fury in a series of status updates on Monday. Status updates?
Status updates?
Was one of them that she's single now? Would you stop? You're a crazy bitch.
In a relationship with crazy.
In one, she
it's complicated.
It's complicated.
In one post,
yes,
she compared President Obama to Adolf Hitler. She said, someone is paying the National Park Service thugs overtime for their efforts to carry out the order of the Fuhrer.
What?
Where are our constitutional sheriffs who can revoke the Park Service Ranger's authority to arrest?
What?
Do we have any sheriffs with a pair?
What?
None of that makes any sense.
And might I say, if you saw a picture of her, it looks like she has a pair.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Reading a book by a friend of mine, Rob Dano, who was a National Forest Ranger, Yellowstone, all over Channel
right.
Islands, stood up to, I believe, Daniel Snyder, the owner of the Washington Redskins, who clear-cut a bunch of trees in about 10 years ago to have a better view of the Potomac River.
Yeah. Oh.
And he said, I'm a National Forest Ranger. You can't do that. And the National Forest Service said, shut up, shut up, shut up, shut up. And he went to court and he won the battle.
Ah, so good for him. Wow.
That was a ranger that might stand up to these people that say that rangers should stand up to Obama.
Right.
He would disagree with that. Just
she continued, unfortunately.
Yes.
While the POTUS continues to punish the American people,
God.
He keeps open his golf course, he keeps open what? Camp David, and he retains he and his wife's excessive staff and stable of czars. I bet...
we will be teeing off from the red teeth!
I bet he has kept in service his three food tasters. Well, yeah, because of idiots like you, yes!
Because there's no food safety anymore, thanks to the shutdown.
Yeah, exactly.
What if that woman, Paula, the racist one?
In an interview with the Arizona Capital Times, she stood by her comparison of Obama to Hitler. Obama, Hitler, straight line.
Sure.
He's dictating beyond his authority, she said.
What?
It's not just the death camps. Hitler.
Death what? Camps?
She's referring to Hitler now. I know, trying to keep
up.
Oh.
Hitler started in the community. So, see, community organizer. Eventually.
Jesus Christ was Hitler.
Everybody starts in their own community.
Jesus had a mustache, and Hitler had a mustache, and he worked in the community.
And Hitler may have been part Jewish. Jesus was
Jewish.
Wait a minute.
33, and Hitler was...
33. And an LP is 33 and a third.
And the weird thing is this is no more a circular ball of nonsense than any tea party.
Exactly.
You call it nonsense.
Now it all makes sense.
We call it the end times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jehovah God.
19.
So keep on going.
God, the end is near. Okay, let me finish. Okay, it's not just the death camps. Hitler started in the communities with national health care and gun control.
Oh,
Autobahn Bismarck started German national health care in the
1880s. Hitler wasn't even born yet, you friggin' morons.
And by the way, you could have guns, just not the Jews. You better read your history.
Oh, we've read more history than you have.
Is that a Texas high school history book?
Yes.
When Jesus rode into Jerusalem on a dinosaur.
Right. Germany started with national health care and gun control before any of that other stuff happened.
What?
And Hitler was elected by a majority of the people.
No, that's not true.
So you can see straight line.
Mm-hmm.
Getting 30 million people health
Hitler
insurance, killing 6 million Jews.
Appointed
Same.
Chancellor.
Same.
And then got a, like 30% of... Oh, 33% again.
33.
You better read your history, Jim.
Mm-hmm. He lived on 33rd Street, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God. So she happens, and we all let her.
And I'm a product of the Arizona education system as well.
Wow.
Nicely done.
Oh, God.
Nicely done, sir. Nicely done. Well, and that kind of explains why this is the best you could do.
This is it. This is all I got.
Let that be a lesson to you, parents. 19 minutes after
Don't
the hour.
Go to school in Arizona.
Do not do it.
Don't let your sons grow up to be cowboys.
Right.
Or Republicans.
Right. Oh, more coffee with Carlos. Al's Rocky as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
A beautifully wrapped, glossy, sweet-smelling show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Bubble butt. Bubble, bubble, bubble butt. Bubble butt. Bubble, bubble, bubble butt. Bubble butt. Bubble, bubble, bubble butt.
Yeah.
Turn around, stick it out, show them what you gotta. Bubble butt.
This is awful.
Yeah.
This is not music.
Yeah. Bing Crosby did the original.
Bing Crosby.
Bubble butt. You got a bubble butt.
I'm dreaming of a bubble butt. Meets the gold of the day. I will wait for your bubble butt.
My dog.
Why do I even show
butt.
Up when they're here? I don't know. Coffee with Carlos Elsraqui, who, by the way, you can see Carlos live this Friday at the Marin Showcase Theater.
Marin Comedy Showcase Theater. Go to marincomedyshow.com or call 415-473-6800 for tickets. We have a few VIP $30 tickets left. You can come backstage and meet me after the show.
Wow.
And he is as cute as a button. Or bug's teeth. Either one.
Did my own sound effects there. There.
That's our Ted Cruz bug zapper. Is he not? You guys are character.
Yeah. I'm a Harvard elite.
Okay, you guys are obviously character experts. Yes. Is he not? You know, I was thinking yesterday, he's actually more of a combination of Ed Grimley and Pat from Saturday Night Live.
I must say.
Yeah, he's an odd little feller. Speaking of which, did you see Boner yesterday? Asked about votes for a clean funding bill. He walked out humming.
What?
Yeah. I think he's starting to have a breakdown. Remember the last time we went through this? He was like, well, ifs, ands, and buts were candy and nuts. Or what? He just burst out.
If buts were nuts.
Stuff that your uncle at Thanksgiving, you'd just be like, what?
If a frog had wings, it wouldn't bump his ass a hopping. Hey, that's from Raising Arizona, where they have crappy education.
Reminds me of your, remember when you used to be your voice guy? You would do Ross Perot-isms. You'd have to think of things like just crazy.
If a frog has the face of a paint can, you can't make soup with it.
What?
Right.
Yeah.
I've always thought that. What?
I never understood any of this either.
You tie your shoes with your teeth, you'll never get caught in a windstorm.
Or Dan Ratherism, same thing. What does he? How did he even think of it?
This place is tighter than a frog's behind. This place is hotter than a Times Square relic.
Right. Okay. So, let's see. He said he wants to have a conversation with the president.
I don't have a conversation with him. I would tell him to shove it.
I love how he sounds like he thinks he sounds reasonable. I want to have a conversation. I'm not drawing any lines in the sand. There's no boundaries here. There's nothing on the table. There's nothing off the table. Oh, that's really big of him, isn't it? To let the president
keep hovering.
His law that's been passed 3.5 years ago, upheld by the Supreme Court.
Won two elections.
Yeah. He declined to answer a question about the House would back a short-term debt limit increase. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of speculation. He said, repeating that he wanted to sit down and have a conversation. He dodged a reporter's question at the end of a press conference on allowing a vote on a clean continuing resolution, a bill to fund the government.
He doesn't want to have a conversation about that.
No, he does not. He seemed very not that chatty about that. Boner said the House did not on Sunday, remember, he said House did not have the votes to pass a clean resolution. But other tallies by pretty much every media outlet says it would pass. He said, and I'm quoting, "Do do do." He hummed, walking out.
I guess he likes the police.
Do 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 da da da, da is all I want to say to you.
Not sure if it was that do do do.
That'd be better than him humming Roxanne.
I love you since I knew you. I want to talk about it for you.
The boner. Here's the boner.
So the president said today was, if there's unconditional surrender by Republicans, he'll sit down and talk to us. That's not the way our government works. We can't raise the debt ceiling without doing something about what's driving us to borrow more money and to live beyond our means. The idea that we should continue to spend money that we don't have and give the bill to our kids and our grandkids would be wrong.
What is he talking about?
As the president said again yesterday, this does not add a penny to our debt.
Yeah.
It's not about spending more money. It's about paying the bills we've already... It's just, how many times can you say it?
Yeah. A war that costs millions. Now, that's something we can leave our grandkids.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The problem is, like, Boner knows it. He knows that. It's like, this isn't the way our government works. And as Jim said, first of all, our government doesn't work at all.
Thanks to you.
And number two, yes, it is. You pass laws, and if they're upheld by the Supreme Court, they're laws. You don't get to go back and relitigate them.
Everybody hates this surrender.
Surrender. We're like Custer. We don't surrender. But again, it's the Ezra Klein analysis. If this Obamacare is so bad, why don't you just let it pass?
Let it go. Let it
Sign
go.
Sign a clean bill. Let it go. And then you will obviously win more seats.
Let's see how it goes. Election. Let's see how it goes, as they say in Philly. 29 minutes after the hour. Right back with more Carlos Elsraqui on the Stephanie Miller Show.
no ordinary nut, son. That's
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. All right. Wow. Remember the first time he called in? Just pretending to be some hapless listener
that's
found
right.
a phone to dial in on? And we let, hey, wait a minute. You're Sean Astin. Stop it.
The ball turret gunner from Memphis Belle?
Yes. Hello, movie star. Good morning, Sean Astin.
I'm totally going to GoMeeting.com right now. That's just how good an advertiser, a promoter you are, the products you're advertising.
Thank
I mean,
you.
That,
yes.
I'm like totally going to do that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yes, so by the by, you are, well, as a, Sam, what do you call it? Sam, you know I'm not a fan of those
Sam
movies.
Wise.
I'm sorry. Samwise Ganji. That's what most people.
You said it right.
Right.
That's not good anymore.
See,
how could you not like it? You spend your whole time fighting for good.
You don't understand because I'm many, many people went to Notre Dame in my family. I am solely devoted to you as Rudy. That's
the fact that Stephanie Miller's devoted to me in any way, shape, or form makes me want to pass out. It's very exciting.
Yes, it gives me the vapors as well. So, but you anyway. So we found out. We were like, wow, who is this incredibly smart, well-spoken, eloquent guy on the lines? And it was you, you little scamp. And now you're doing your own thing. Tell us about what you're doing. You're hosting.
Well, I'm trying to follow in your footsteps.
Right.
And I want to have I've been producing a political radio show online for we've done 36 2-hour episodes. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing. It's really my Republican friends are sure I'm a Democrat. My Democrat friends are sure I'm a Republican. It's all about civil discourse and really getting, you know, I've like Michael Medved's been on the show. Noam Chomsky's been on the show. I had the head of the Congressional Budget Office on the show. It's like you just and they really get to talk and they really get to express themselves. And you know, we did an episode on Syria. We did an episode on when the Sandy Hook tragedy happened. We did an episode all on that. We did, you know, so we're able to be responsive, and it just gives me the opportunity to feel like I'm contributing to this unbelievably, tortured time in America.
Yeah. You know what I think helps, Sean, is that the Republican Party is a complete and total hot mess, because I had Michael Medved on yesterday. And he pretty much agreed with me.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Well, listen, here's, you know me, I'm a liberal Democrat.
Right.
So, I'm straightforward about that on the show, but I really, like I said, I sublimate that. People don't know, you know, until the end of the show when I kind of share opinions or if it's necessary to push the conversation forward. But I really want to, you know, everybody, whether it's a pro-life, you know, the head of some pro-life organization that I have on the show, everybody who's a guest on the show comes away feeling like I got a chance to express myself completely, and that was a great experience. So, that said, so when I hear you, if you would have said that Obama had done something terrible, I would have started by describing what I thought some deficiency was with Republicans. So you just started out by saying they're a hot mess, and Michael Medved, a great conservative, my friend, like had to acknowledge that, as everybody is. I think Obama's blowing it right now. I really do. I think the way that, not the posture he's taking, he's not giving in on a mechanical reality of the Constitution and the government, because it would be an awful precedent to set for any president going forward.
Yeah, and he made that point yesterday. It's about precedent as well.
Points,
and for any president, particularly a Republican one, you know, in the future perhaps. Which I know now we're in like space, you know, science fiction. Like I know, but anyway,
yeah, anything could happen. If I was the president's messaging guy, I would say go out there and just hammer over and over again, because he speaks a million different times. He was, you know, sort of, it was not the campaign stump, but he was in a place with a flag behind him and his sleeves rolled up and he's pounding the lectern and talking about, you know, and not speaking in a kind of, you know, presidential authority way, but a guy who's out there fighting. I just keep saying I'm desperate to compromise. Let's compromise. Sign this bill and let's do this. I want to compromise and give a list of detailed things that you want to compromise on, because their whole messaging thing, the Republicans' whole messaging thing, is you have to compromise. You have to compromise. And they're just hoping that that's just locking in to the body politic that, you know,
well,
the Democrats don't compromise.
Yeah.
So that's
but
great.
Sean, I think what he should be saying is what is also true. They have already compromised. This actually represents a huge, you know, Democratic compromise, where the spending levels they're at already. So I disagree with you that he should be saying, I want to compromise more. He already has. And this has never happened in our history. We have never had a political party, well, except for them the last time 2 years ago, threatened to bring down the entire, you know, not just our economy, the world economy.
Well, the Clinton Gingrich moment was fascinating, and Clinton came away in terms of the mechanics of government, the winner of that. So I just wonder what the calculus is for Boehner. He just seems to be kind of whipsawed by his party. And
he's
really
drunk. He's orange and drunk.
But you look at this debt ceiling thing, and it seems to me like the way this is going to end is the president will have some wiggle room on something to do with the debt ceiling, and they'll be able to, the Republicans will be able to claim victory that they got him to move there, and they'll pass that CR with nothing else attached to it, and then no one will remember it 3 weeks from now.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I have shut down fatigue myself. But you, but so by the way, you're doing a Kickstarter campaign for your show.
For my show, yeah. Because I've done this show myself. My radio, Vox Populi, my radio show. Your producer took my call and then connected me to you.
Yes.
I have no producer. I'm a guy by myself answering the phone, and like I have no idea who's
on
the
call. Jim used to answer the phones when we started. So and that was only a few years ago.
Yeah. No. Answering the phones is good. So, Chip, you want to come work? Can I steal them away?
No.
No? Okay. No, I want to have a producer, and I need, like, maybe one or two other people to help me with social media and help me with booking. Nobody has said no to me yet that I've been able to actually physically get on the telephone or send an email to their actual email address. Everybody is willing to talk to me, but it's...
You know why? Because you have that don't say die, Rudy. You know, no quitterness. That's what it is.
25. Well, it's true. I'm the Rudy of political talk show hosts.
Might as well use it to your advantage.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was reading something. I didn't realize that you got the politics bug from your mom, from Patty Duke.
As you did from your dad, yeah.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did not realize. Well, she's president of SAG now, but I didn't realize that.
No, not now.
Not now.
Well, it was. I mean, excuse me, was. But I mean,
no, like Ronald Reagan before her, she was president of the Screen Actors Guild for two terms.
Right.
And you know, and all actors are interested in politics because we do shows that talk about ideas, and we use our voice, and politicians use their voice, and so we all believe we can do anything. But my mom and dad just sort of. They made me believe as a kid that I could sort of make a difference, that I had a place in the big game. So I was an idiot. I believed them.
I was saying, oh, how quaint. That sounds so nostalgic.
Was your dad, John Astin, politically involved?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, he did a lot of, like I said, union work with the Directors Guild of America and the Writers Guild when they had a strike. He was very there. But I think he campaigned. Oh my gosh, I don't want to get it wrong, but I think like Barry Goldwater or something like that.
Oh,
I think,
thank you. We thank you.
I think that's right. If not, it'll just be right for this show. but he, and it was before my time, obviously. If you sit down and talk with him, whoo, he is first of all really bright and well spoken. But I mean, if you're a liberal, if you're a progressive. He's way.
What's Thanksgiving going to be like this year? How's that go for you guys?
Hey, everybody spread out. You know what? People, nobody talks. This is the problem. Nobody cares to talk about politics at holidays because we're all so like happy to see each other. We spent the whole year apart, and people, you can see it now. Right, and as soon as the political conversation starts, whoever starts it knows now that it's just a catastrophe.
Yeah,
because
no, that's what's happened in our family because we've had a split in terms of, and we, that's the rule. And
well, right,
everybody handles it differently. We just don't talk about it.
We're having a Thanksgiving shutdown.
Yeah, we've had a politics shutdown in our family. Yeah.
The half of your family that won't listen to your show should listen to my show because it's all about sort of cultivating the ability to have civil discourse.
Listen, you thieving little audience bastard.
I'm going to burn all my Lord of the Rings
trying to steal my family right out from under me.
Okay, so here's how, if we were on my show, this is how I'd respond to that. So listen, while that's absolutely true, I think it's important to also understand, see, I made you right.
See what
I'm
you did
I'm a thieving whatever bastard, but... There's another side.
Listen, I'm a professional. Don't try that on me, you little all about Eve bastard.
I know you're so smart. Here's one thing I don't have on my show, and I don't know if I can compete with you in this realm. I don't have any sound effects.
Yeah, well, I can. I'll give you this as a lovely parting gift.
We have dolphins.
Sean, Stephanie, are you there?
Yes.
SeanAstin.com is a way for, I'm sure every one of your listeners knows what Kickstarter is.
Yes.
And so if they want to help me with my civics project and my passion project, I would really appreciate it if they jump on to SeanAstin.com and it'll take them right where they need to go.
Please do it. Sean Astin is delightful in every way.
And we also
you're delightful. I
no,
love you.
No, you.
So much.
I know you're working with Rob Paulson, too, on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right?
Yeah, I'm doing a radio tour on Friday for our second season of Teenage Mutant. It's all about the second season these days.
Wow.
Second season of I'm Raphael. Come on, dude, right. Stop talking and start fighting.
That's great. And I think Rob would be a great guest for your show because I know that you have probably disparate opinions about politics. So
you know what? He is such a magnanimous guy that it would be he would be fantastic to talk about. I don't know how he backed the campaign. As soon as I jumped on, he went in and put dollars there, and I was on his podcast, which is all about animation and voiceover stuff, and he's just a legend. I love him so much, and so, yeah, but you know what? He is the model of civil discourse. He's a guy who, even if he just wants to, you know, shoot a flamethrower at you for your opinion,
well,
you're pretty sure you just got a dinner invitation.
I think people that want civil discourse are idiots. Yeah. All right, Sean Astin, I love you. We'll talk to you soon, honey. You got to go. Thanks, honey.
Thank you. Bye.
All right.
Bye. Oh, he's awesome.
My Republican friends are the ones that are going to pick me up from LAX on a Friday. The liberal friends are like, dude, I'm stoned. I can't make it.
Dude, no, why? I got to rave. Okay, 45 minutes after the hour, right back with more Coffee with Carlos on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Call the political party line now, 1-800-STEP-12. Stephanie Miller.
You're playing my whole spinning catalog. You're just sucking up to me now.
Yeah.
It is the Stephanie Miller show.
If Crystal Meth had a music, this would be
had
it.
Had a sound, this would be it.
Yeah.
Can I get a what what? Can I get a what what?
What what?
Yeah, huh? What? What? Can I get a what? All right. It is the Stephanie Miller Show this hour brought to you by GoToMeeting. We actually had a GoToMeeting about that. I said, do you have that and Bubble Butt? Remember that?
Yep, I do.
Yep. Meetings essential to the way we work, particularly the ones that Chris enjoys like that. It's an opportunity to share ideas. Like, I'm like, I would like this as a bump, and you say, that song sucks.
Well.
And I'm like, well, just do it.
Do it.
That's how we problem solve, is I say, just do it.
Yep.
If your team is spread out in different locations or, you know, maybe different musical tastes, coming together can be an impossible task, but not with GoToMeeting with HD Faces. By Citrix, it's the powerfully simple way to meet and collaborate online. You can look at PowerPoints and graphics and documents. You can work on the same document at the same time. Everyone sees it at the same time.
That's magical.
Right? Exactly. Thank you. No matter where everyone is located, GoToMeeting allows you to share the same screen. You just turn on your webcam and there's everybody. You can see everybody's looks of, you know, joy, abject disappointment, whatever it is. And crystal clear video quality.
If they hear that song, it would be abject horror.
Right, so there's no miscommunication. Try GoToMeeting. Right, and I don't care how you feel. Try GoToMeeting free for 30 days for this special offer. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Use the promo code Stephanie. Remember, use the promo code Stephanie. GoToMeeting. Meeting is believing. Yeah, oh, Jim was out getting coffee. He loves that song. Maybe you should play a little, because he missed the bump. Don't you want to hear a little of that, Jim? You remember. It's the
Crystal Meth song.
Yeah!
Yo, bitch.
Woo!
Yo, bitch.
Get it. Can I get a what?
Yo,
what?
Yo, bitch.
Stephanie Miller.
What? I'm sorry, Carlos. Your thoughts?
Yo, bitch. I'm wearing my Sunday GoToMeeting.com clothes.
I've never watched Breaking Bad. Like Brian Cranston is Malcolm's dad, as far as I know.
Ah, well.
By the way, this Friday you can see Carlos El Zarraqui at the Marin Showcase Theater up near San Francisco, and then here in Los Angeles, November 2nd at the Improv.
8 o'clock show Saturday
on Melrose. If you're in the
Hollywood,
if you're in LA, okay. Let's go to Diana in Ohio. You're on with Carlos. Hello, Diana.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
I am pissed.
Okay.
My husband. He just started this job not too long ago, but because of boneheads, they're starting to lay off at his work, and he might lose his job because they put labels on bottles, and the EF is not working now, so they're shut down. And they can't approve the labels that go on these vodka bottles, so.
Yeah, Rose, or excuse me, Diana, sorry, doesn't it drive you nuts when you hear these people on TV go, this doesn't affect anybody, the shutdown doesn't, it doesn't affect my life. It's like, it's affecting a lot of people's lives, and the more it goes on, the more it is going to, I mean, you can't just say shutting down the United States government doesn't affect anybody, right?
Right. And it does. And I mean, I watched Crossfire last night, and there was some tea billy on there who said, this is not going to affect the economy. Baloney.
Yeah.
It's affecting me.
It has. The sequester. They said the same thing about that. It's affecting, and the fact that they're saying the same thing about defaulting on the United States' full faith and credit. I'm like, what? What do you mean it'll have no effect? You can't. Okay. The president.
The only thing that I will say is that we're not going to pay a ransom for America paying its bills. We're willing to pass at least a short-term budget that opens up the government at current funding levels.
There you go. I think the president made that analogy yesterday. If you don't pay your mortgage, it doesn't mean you're saving money. It means you're deadbeat.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to lose your house. I mean, that's what it means.
Who was the senator from Illinois that was the deadbeat dad? Walsh?
Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh.
That dillweed.
He's used to that.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. He's like, why is that a bad thing?
It's not a bad thing.
Rose in Chicago. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
Hi, Rose.
I just had a comment. You know, you always...
Mary, is that you?
No, you always, for Obama, there's one person to blame.
It is.
You have a fake name.
Why?
Hi,
that's
Mary.
Adorable.
Yeah.
I miss you, Mayor.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Rose. I mean, Rose, sorry.
No, the American people... The American people, okay, they don't want this.
Want what? A government shutdown? No, they don't.
No. There's one person to blame. You call everybody a douchebag.
I'm going to guess it's the black guy, right?
Here we go.
Start
the race thing.
The American people who voted in him twice don't
black,
want it.
White, polka dot, pink. One person to blame, it's him.
Right, but you did once mention that it's the blacks in the Escalade that are stealing
it's
all your funds,
him.
Your son's food stamps,
no,
remember?
No, it's him. Blame
it's the president.
Him. He's
only
the
one
douchebag.
Black
okay. Blame him.
Why is he a douchebag?
He just talks and talks and talks. And that's
presidents
it. And
do
it's
make
it.
Speeches, you know.
You know what? He.
You know what?
You know, use all yous and all you people like you, you're nothing but ass lickers.
Oh, wow. All right. You know what? I think I need
I don't think we can air that.
You can't say that.
I'd rather err on the side
What's
of caution.
What's wrong with saying we're lickers? Well,
that's
awesome.
If you want to hear what she really said, get the Stephcast, only $4.95
a month. Travis, did you really fall for that? Or
I thought I heard that. I heard that.
You know what? You know what? This is Rose. Chicago.
You know, the blacks. And they're escalating.
Travis,
my
this
point
is not Rose Flair Mary.
The blacks.
All right. Oh, that was precious. Okay, the president yesterday.
What I've said is that I will talk about anything. My suggestion to the speaker has been and will continue to be, let's stop the excuses. Let's take a vote in the House.
There he goes talking.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Vote. There he is talking again. He's talking.
So he doesn't
just say. Oh, he doesn't talk.
Painter, cocktail? Cocktail?
He just wants to have a conversation. He's just that close talker in the bar. He just wants to...
All we're asking for is to sit down and have this conversation. There's no reason to make it more difficult to bring people to the table. And so there's no boundaries here. There's nothing on the table. There's nothing off the table.
Except bourbon.
That sounds like a bad magician. There's nothing on the table. Nothing on the table. I got your watch.
What happened? Oh, whoops.
I didn't get your vote, but I got your watch.
Don't look at this hand.
Like a drunk magician.
Don't look at this hand.
Look what I just pulled out of my ass. Look at that. Can you believe that talking point? Did you read the story in the New York Times about how this was absolutely all planned? This is not some crisis they stumbled into. Koch brothers, all those people, this has been funded and planned, and this is why they haven't refused to talk until right now, because they think that this is their leverage, or what did Paul Ryan call it? Forcing mechanism.
Yeah.
My friend Michelle Reiner wrote me yesterday and said, I know, I've been obsessed with that New York Times article, too. I brought it in the car and started reading it to Rob, and he started yelling so loud he made me stop. And if you've ever been yelled at by Rob Reiner, I have.
Have you
just about politics.
Oh, okay.
He's passionate. You know, back when he was on Team Hillary and I was Team Obama.
We had some
lively discussions. Exactly.
Still, you could be on the same team.
Yeah.
I seem to remember that you and Sean Astin were on opposite teams.
Yes, he was also Team Hillary.
Yes.
Yes, yes, and now we've all magically come back together. And we'll be on Team Hillary again.
Yes, we will.
When she's president.
Which means the Tea Republicans and the regular Republicans can come back together as well. Because they're fighting each other right now.
I know. See how that works out.
In a tank.
See how that works out. Carlos Alzaraki, Marin Showcase this Friday, the Improv, November 2nd. We love you, Carlos.
Thank you.
All right. 58 minutes after the hour, Jim Hot Bree, and the writer of the new WikiLeaks movie as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, why not? What a show. Carlos Alzaraki, Sean Astin already. Sexy Liberal House Parts next hour. And Jim, look what I brought you for breakfast.
Hey. Oh.
Hot Bree on with Steffi. Good morning, activist Melissa Fitzgerald.
Well, good morning, Stephanie Miller.
Well, I brought Jim Hot Bree, and you brought me another magical gift. Have you brought with you today?
I brought the most wonderful writer, Joshua Singer, who was a writer on The West Wing, and now he has a fantastic movie coming out called The Fifth Estate, and I just saw it Monday night, and I am here just to brag about my friend, Josh Singer, and let him, he won't brag about himself, but he's the greatest!
Look how handsome and romantic he is!
And talented, and smart, and brilliant, and he wrote a great movie!
Enough.
Josh, I'm so happy you're here this morning. I've been seeing the promos all over MSNBC and everywhere else, and they look great. And you got the best compliment. Someone said the movie's actually better than the promos.
A friend of mine said that, but you know he is a friend, so he's a little biased. But we're really excited about the movie. We think it's pretty terrific and real provocative. We hope it'll start a lot of conversation about what should be public, what shouldn't be public, and who should be making those decisions.
Yeah, we've had some lively conversation here on the Stephanie Miller Show about that.
Yeah,
Jim's a Julian Assange fan.
Is that right?
Well, I think we need whistleblowers, and to accuse someone of being a traitor without any evidence for that. Well, Valerie Plame has an article.
Let Josh address that, because I thought the most interesting thing. The LA Times has a piece: Will the WikiLeaks movie The Fifth Estate turn Assange into a hero? And I think you're quoted in here, or somebody from the movie, saying that you're trying to not portray him as necessarily a hero or a traitor, to just lay out the story.
Yeah, right? We're really trying to be quite balanced, in fact, because, it's interesting, right? I am a big fan of whistleblowers as well, and I think that it's what Assange's ideals were in setting up this site. They're fantastic. You know, the ideals of trying to set up a site that protected whistleblowers, I think that was a great idea, is a great idea, and I think that he was really a pioneer. And a lot of what we do in the movie is celebrate that. The beginning of the movie is all about celebrating a lot of the early leaks that Assange published and the WikiLeaks published. We're big, big fans. The question becomes, as the site evolved and as Assange evolved, they started doing things that weren't exactly protecting whistleblowers, but were instead, leaking these huge, troughs of data. And is that the same thing? And I think that becomes a question. And moreover, it's not only a question of is that the same thing as leaking a specific leak from a whistleblower, but then also there's the question of who do you want making those decisions if you've got all this data, if you've got 250,000 State Department cables?
Well, that's what, we've talked about, and Melissa's, chimed in on that as well, is the breadth of it. It was, 90,000 military documents about the war in Afghanistan? And the LA Times even asking, was that information the world really needed to know? I mean, it's the breadth of it.
Right. And what's interesting is, Assange partnered with the New York Times and the Guardian, Der Spiegel, and then later with a couple other newspapers around the world to try to find the stories in those documents. And I think the reportage on a lot of that stuff was terrific. But it still begs the question, is this information the world needs to know? And is it information that does more harm than good, or is it information that does more good than harm? And moreover, I think there is, beyond that question of should it be public, should it be private, there's also the question of, what about who makes these decisions?
Yeah.
Who should be making the decision of whether to put it out there?
In the trailer, there's that gripping moment where one of his colleagues challenges him after he yells, lives are at stake. He challenges him, you know, about this huge document dump. And Assange says, what about the lives of the civilians and these casualties, and which is really the crux of the film, right?
Sure, but that's a very interesting conflating, right? And that's to me one of the fascinating things that Julie intends to do, which is that you can be for the New York Times doing stories about the information in the Afghan war logs, and you can still say, yeah, but I wish Julian hadn't put so many of those war logs out unredacted, right, which he did. I wish he wouldn't have put them out with, you know, names in them. You can still be for, hey, I want to read the stories about this. And, in fact, the New York Times and the Guardian, Der Spiegel, were much more circumspect in how they leaked the raw information along with their stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
I think for me, that was one of the things that was so interesting about the film and your exploration of a couple things. One, at what cost? Like, he has a very extreme and, I think, pure view of the public's right to know and need to know, and that's a good thing. And he's willing to pay the price for that, which is really not costing him all that much. It's costing other people's lives. He was willing to put those at stake. And then also, who is making the decision? And you explore that, and we get a window into who is making that decision. And frankly, you know, I'm not that comfortable with who is making that decision.
Right, and that's the fundamental crux of this question. And frankly, it's you know, you guys are all journalists. come on now, a certain kind of, you know.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
But so in the last 10 years, we've had a real. It's been a tough 10 years for journalism, and a tough 10 years for newspapers that have gone out of business, and a tough 10 years for reporters. So many investigative journalists have lost their jobs, and with that decline, there is less of a check on power. Mm-hmm. And so when you see people like Julian Assange and Daniel Domscheit-Berg springing up and trying to create a new check on power through this website, you get very excited. Terrific. We've got somebody to step in and do what the newspapers were doing. But the question then becomes, well, when it's the New York Times who's being that check on government, right, they have standards, institutional standards. They have journalistic integrity,
right, and redacted names in a lot of you know, instances where people would be harmed,
right, and so these guys are much more careful, you know, and when you've got Julian Assange doing it, you know, okay, on the one hand, I'm very excited that he's trying to be a check on power. On the other hand, is he going to be as responsible as the New York Times? Maybe not, and maybe that's even okay, but I think that's something we need to talk about.
Well, it's interesting. The LA Times, where this is, you know, they were talking about their evolution, that the original WikiLeaks, they said, videos such as these are extremely valuable for the public to see. We must understand what's being done in our name when the United States is at war, but we also know that pictures may not tell the full story. Then after WikiLeaks revealed all those, you know, the U.S. diplomatic cables, they said, they took a harsher view. They said many disclosures of classified information, such as the release of the Pentagon Papers in 1971, have served the public interest by shedding light on previously obscure development of government policy. The latest document dumped by WikiLeaks, consisting of diplomatic cables rather than military reports, so far falls short of that noble purpose. Though it contains some fascinating, even titillating details, the primary objective seems to be to embarrass the United States and complicate its foreign policy.
Right. So to me, that's a great contrast, right? The collateral murder video, which WikiLeaks, you know, put out there, I think is a great check on power. Now, my friend Lawrence O'Donnell would disagree and say, hey, those were soldiers doing what they had to do at a time of war.
In the fog of war, maybe.
Correct.
But I think
that's a good debate for us to have. And I think putting that video out, especially because, you know, the government had sort of covered up the fact that two Reuters journalists had been killed in this mistake, right? The fact that had been somewhat covered up, I think putting that video out was a great thing to do. But when you look at the cables, right, you have to look at the harm. And something that I think has not been well chronicled is the fact that there are 2,000 – so how do we get our information in the United States? You know, most people think it's 007 and spies and, you know, and the CIA and, you know, and the NSA. And, yes, that's some of how we get our information. But a lot of our information comes from embassies, right? And that is from our embassies abroad and from the contacts we make over there and from sources we have
people
in the
field. People who want to help us, right.
Just people who want to help us. And when those sources talk to us to try to communicate all the great information we have, you know, our embassy folks write up cables. And in those cables, they will reference these sources. And if the sources are people who would be harmed if their names would appear, you say strictly protect. There, it literally says strictly protect on the cables, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And when Assange released these cables, there were 2,000 strictly protected sources whose names were suddenly made public, right? And if those names are public, what happens? Those 2,000 sources have got to get out of the country.
Right, and, right? Their, and their families, what happens? I mean,
so,
yeah.
So basically their lives are uprooted, and I heard countless stories of this happening, right? And countless stories from State Department insiders who had left the State Department, who weren't biased, who right. basically were telling me, you know, these sources, not only did they have their lives totally turned upside down because we had to get them out of country, but beyond that, we no longer had those 2,000 great sources that gave us information. Now, if you don't believe in what the U.S. State Department is doing, that's fine. If you're against what the U.S. State Department is doing, you know, then maybe you want Assange to leak this. But if you, like me, believe that the U.S. State Department does some pretty good work, right, and is actually trying to help make the world a better place, then maybe you don't want these cables out there in the raw form the way Assange put them out.
And it also seems maybe you can't get those people out in time and what happens to them. Yeah. And I think that those are really hard to, you know, what happens to their families and their friends. Because, you know, I've talked about this yeah. last time that I was on the show, that I have friends who've worked in the State Department at different agencies in the government. And some of them are quite progressive. And they've said, look, prior to my working here, I would have probably been very pro, you know, the whole WikiLeaks thing. But right. afterwards, I think that the people who leak that information spend the rest of their lives in jail, because I know people whose lives are at risk, their families are at risk for not only being killed but being tortured. And mm-hmm. and what this one particular person said is, and that is not true for the whistleblowers, and it's not true. They will stand trial and possibly stand trial. And that's the worst that will happen.
You know, it seems like you two probably just made a lot of good points, but I didn't hear anything else you said after you said Lawrence O'Donnell. How is my future husband? I hear he was at the screening and is a big fan of
he
yours.
He sends his worship.
And I heard him say that. He said to send his worship.
Yes.
He's a charming fellow, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He that commercial he did about gun control that used to run on MSNBC, that was like my that's soft porn for me. It was really
that was hot. I agree with you. Hot. Really hot.
Hot. Right? Remember the I blame the yeah. I can't remember now.
Yeah.
But I blame the shooter for the
first
10 bullets. Yeah. I blame the law for the next.
Right. Oh, God!
It's like it's female Cialis. It's just, oh, yeah. Yeah.
How do you resist that penetrating intellect? Right? That's really right. It's really something.
It's true. It is true. It well, is. Josh and Lawrence worked as writers on The West Wing together. That's how they know each other, correct? Uh-huh.
We worked. I mean, I had the most wonderful experience when I first moved out to Hollywood, which is that John Wells hired me onto The West Wing. And
oh, that happens to everybody when they first move here.
I got very, very lucky. It's funny. I took a sublet out from his roommate. Took a sublet out from a woman who was dating and later married Lou Wells, who's a wonderful, wonderful guy. Oh, wow. Who was a producer on the show.
Wonderful producer and wonderful man.
And Lou read a West Wing spec that I'd been working on that was about Israel and Palestine and gave it to John. And John read it and, you know, hired me.
Wow.
Which was the greatest thing ever, and John was a fantastic boss. And what was the best thing was I got to have these. I worked not only with wonderful actors.
Melissa Fitzgerald.
Wonderful actors.
And now that we're name-dropping, guess where I had dinner this weekend with Melissa and a bunch of people? At Alice and Janney's house. So there.
Yeah,
top
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Top that.
Wonderful actors.
Listen, unless Martin Sheen's on the phone right now, this game ends right now.
We actually saw Martin Sheen talk at an event downtown L.A., and we were thinking, God, why can't he be the real president?
Yeah, it's a shame,
yeah,
right?
He's
it's a shame.
Great. Such a wonderful man.
18 minutes after the hour, Josh has a great story. Julian Assange did not want this movie made. Not a fan. He had, and the actor, the guy who plays him,
Benedict Cumberbatch,
right, heard from Julian Assange.
Oh,
don't say that three times. It's like Beetlejuice. Don't do it.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
We have a great story about that when we return with Melissa Fitzgerald and Josh Singer on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's fun. It's healthy. It's good exercise. The kids just love it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 23 minutes after the hour. Activist Melissa Fitzgerald, hot Bree in the city, live with us, and her close personal friend, Josh Singer, writer from the West Wing. I think people, by the way, that's why not only was it a great show and people are fans, I think people are like, remember when we really felt like government could be like that? It could work right. like that.
Right.
And as Jim said, maybe Martin Sheen really is president.
Yeah.
That magical. He is the writer. Josh is the writer of the new film, The Fifth Estate, which is getting amazing reviews and is it's opening wide this weekend or
next Friday.
Next Friday.
Yeah, and I saw it Monday night at a screening, and I am so excited and so proud of my friend Josh for writing this. It's a beautiful movie, and I think the topic is so interesting and so important. And I think in less capable hands, this could have been a different kind of film. But not only is it provocative, but it's also a thriller, so you're kind of on the edge of your seat the entire time, which is an interesting combination, because I think in less capable hands it could have been an intellectual exercise, and it's not.
The musical numbers aren't that great.
Yeah, the musical numbers are, I'm dying to go, but as I recall, it was at night, right?
Yes, correct.
I think it was at 7. I was like, at night? No, I can't see that. But I will go see a matinee next weekend, Josh.
Outstanding.
I bet somewhere there's a Josh writer who's a singer.
No.
Well, Josh Singer is also a singer.
Oh, yes. A very, very poor one.
Well, now,
I leave that to Benedict Cumberbatch.
Who plays Julian Assange in the movie. There's a great story I'm just reading in front of me. Actor who plays WikiLeaks founder in The Fifth Estate says he received a long email plea the day before filming began from Julian Assange begging him not to do this.
Don't do this. Don't.
Yeah. It's funny because, we had struggled all throughout the whole process as to whether to reach out to Julian. And we had debated it. And eventually in prep, Bill and I talked about it, and Bill and Benedict Cumberbatch talked about it.
Bill Cumberbatch, the director.
Well, it's funny because, Jeremy Renner had originally been interested in the role, and then wound up, he's doing the American Hustle movie with David O. Russell. And so, and I had a friend who said, so then what happened? Did Spielberg say, get me Cumberbatch? Which is exactly what he did.
DreamWorks.
It's exactly what he did.
I actually heard that the role almost went to Frumious Bandersnatch.
That's right. I was like, get me Bandersnatch. No. Harris Spielberg had worked with Benedict Cumberbatch
I'm changing all my passwords to Benedict Cumberbatch today.
It'll probably do that little noise for you too. He had worked with him in War Horse and loved him.
Right.
And and of course he's done wonderful work in the new BBC series Sherlock. And so the question was, well, is he available and interested? And he was. And so he jumped on board. Get me Cumberbatch. and when Benedict came on board, it's interesting. I started with two books, and then fortunately, we mentioned the charming and talented and penetrating intellect of Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yes.
One of the good things one of the good things about working on The West Wing is I developed a lot of very smart contacts, right? And so one of the first things I did when I was asked to adapt these two books was I just
downloaded your entire contact section of your iPhone while you were talking.
Isn't it impressive?
You didn't even see that coming.
But not only did I reach out to some former, this wonderful fellow, Tony Blinken, put me in touch with Ben Rhodes, who's the deputy NSA. So that was via The West Wing. But then I also had gone to law school, and 12 years ago took a course in Internet and Society. And so I was able to, reach out to Professor Lawrence Lessig at Harvard Law and a bunch of other really smart folks who told me where to look and what to read and the kind of research I should do to sort of get my head around everything. And so I had then 6 months to sort of work on the script. And when Bill Condon, our wonderful, tremendously talented director, jumped on board, Bill, went through the same process as I did, trying to ramp up to speed on the issue. It was, not only are we telling a story, but we wanted to try to be equal and fair and balanced on the issue.
Right.
And so, there was a period of Bill trying to get up to speed. And then when Benedict came on board, he also went through his own Cumber process, in which he had to...
Are there any scenes in which he wears a cummerbund?
there are not. It's such a shame.
Someone should have thought of that.
We were trying to be real. Photoshop. And, I've never seen Assange in a cummerbund, but, perhaps we should. I've now seen Assange in a cumberbatch. That's an entirely different story.
Oh, look, he's on the phone for you.
I am not one of your fans!
Now, he, and this belongs in the Isn't It Ironic file, he posted the, you're one of the scripts. He leaked it.
He did. So,
we got it, now we have to tease for what Julian Assange, his response. See what we did there? It's a tease in radio.
Excellent.
It's like a Cumberbatch. 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That young
Stephanie Miller
fills me with hope and some other emotions that are weird and deeply confusing me.
Uh-huh. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. Sexy Liberal Hal Sparks, Hump Days with Hal, in hour number 3, 34 minutes after the hour. We're just lousy with sexy liberals today. Melissa Fitzgerald, Hopper in the city over there. And I did not realize how dreamy Josh Singer, the writer of the new film Fifth Estate, was.
Too kind.
Oh, he is. He's very dreamy in every way. And he's from Philly.
Oh, is that how it goes?
That's how it goes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, he's from Philly.
Do you have any water around there? Is there a glass of water?
No, but I have a cake.
So everybody's talking about your new film, which opens next weekend, you said?
The 18th. Okay. That is correct.
Awesome.
It's great.
And we were talking before the break about that Julian Assange wrote to the lead actor who plays him.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
I let you say it.
I appreciate
to
that.
Ask him not to.
Really just rolls off the tongue.
Right. To ask him not to do this. So he has, he's been outspoken. He's been outspoken in his opposition to the film, which he's called a massive propaganda attack on him and his organization. I was saying, ironically, in the Isn't It Ironic file, he posted a leaked script.
He did. He posted a leaked script.
So he leaked the script.
He did.
Okay. Yeah, How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm proud of my work, frankly.
As well you should be. Go ahead, leak it.
So we were chatting. So, everyone who joined the project had a huge ramp up, a learning curve in terms of information about, because there's so much out there. And when Benedict Cumberbatch joined the project, he as well was trying to get, his brain around, trying to wrap his arms around the world, as you two would say.
Right.
And he essentially said, and we'd already been talking about reaching out to Julian. When I was writing, I felt like I had so much material, I didn't necessarily, A, need to, and B, I was pretty sure what he would say, because he came out pretty early on saying, these are the two worst books, and this is just going to be an attack.
Your script was based on these two books.
Yeah, it was based on a book by this fella, Daniel Domscheit-Berg, who was Julian's number two for a long period of time, and then a book by Guardian writers David Lee and Luke Harding. And Daniel is a guy who Julian tried very hard to discredit when he left the organization, because Daniel basically said, I believe in whistleblowing, I believe in the ideals, but I don't believe in Julian Assange. And of course, that's anathema to Julian. And
right.
So,
right.
Look, Julian coming out against the film, it's sort of like, okay, so it's Tuesday. Julian comes out against almost every piece of material. He attacked the wonderful Alex Gibney documentary. And, it's hard to attack that documentary given, it's basically just lots of people telling, their versions of the truth. And our film really tries to be quite balanced.
Well,
and
he called it a work of fiction masquerading as fact. In fact, most of the events depicted never happened, or the people shown were not involved in them.
Right, isn't true. Here's the thing. It's a movie, so of course there is fictionalization and there is dramatization. Since the beginning of time, people have been taking histories and dramatizing them to try to engage a larger public, which is what we're doing. We're
Shakespeare,
to get it,
for example.
Well, I wouldn't hold myself up next to him, but our director Bill Condon maybe. So this is an age old thing where we're trying to get at larger themes and larger ideas.
This reminds me of just quickly is Zero Dark Thirty, the controversy surrounding that, because Bigelow was saying that, look, this is, we're depicting the events that as they happen, but I have to say, as a liberal, it did give the impression that torture led to, because torture agreed in that time, it occurred in that time period, that is realistic, but it gives the distinct impression that's what led to getting,
which is not true.
And I don't want to talk about that movie necessarily, but I will say we were incredibly well-researched. Again, as I said before the break, I went back to Professor Lawrence Lessig and a bunch of really sharp guys at Harvard Law School. I talked to Ethan Zuckerman, who founded the Global Voices
Conference. That's one of the major Ivies, right?
As opposed to the one I went to.
Right. Listen, you hush over there, Minor Ivy.
My wife went to Penn. So,
I know she did. You had good
taste. And I'm from
Philly,
so we're big fans of University of Pennsylvania over on this side of the room. But
we're big fans of all the Minor Ivies. All right, go ahead.
And his wife is brilliant, so I'm going to claim her.
But we did a ton of research. We talked to a lot of really sharp people who are on the cutting edge. You know, Lawrence Lessig wrote a book, Code, dozens of years ago about this sort of thing, and really trying to think about how the internet interacts, with our world. And, I did a ton of research, and I went and I sat down with, Daniel Domscheit-Berg and sat down with the Guardian folks and sat down with Jansdottir to try to really get a sense of what was, even in the stories I was handed, what was true and what wasn't. And when we wrote the film and then shot the film, we were very, very careful with how we dramatized because we wanted to be very responsible. We know the situation that Assange is in, and we didn't want to compromise that. We didn't want to compromise Manning. And so we were extremely careful. I would say, the amount of stuff we left out, right, which is even more negative towards Julian Assange. He frankly should be thanking us.
Actually. Maybe there'll be a fruit basket after this interview.
Somehow I doubt it. But
thank you for not mentioning that thing. You know what I'm talking
thing.
About.
You know, the unpleasantness.
Right,
well,
exactly.
He's in the London Embassy in the British
Ecuadorian Embassy
Ecuadorian
in Britain.
So I wonder what the food's like there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A lot of plantains.
He could use a fruit basket.
After posting the leaked script, WikiLeaks tweeted, "As WikiLeaks was never consulted about the DreamWorks Disney film on us, we've given our advice for free. It's bad."
Right, so, exactly.
Well, can I just say,
the critics and the audiences disagree thus far from what I'm told.
But what do Statler and Waldorf think?
Go ahead.
Well, I just have two things to say about this. Number one, after seeing the film, I dislike Julian Assange way less than before I saw the film, so he should be kissing your booty, number one. And number two, Josh is a nerd. So there is no doubt that he over-researched this. So the accuracy, I have no doubt, having known Josh for almost 10 years now, that he is just meticulous about that. And,
cheat off his paper, Minor Ivy?
How did I go from dreamy to a nerd in the span of 20 minutes?
You are both things in one. He is a dreamy nerd, absolutely.
A druid.
And he is, and I've worked with Josh, actually, because Josh wrote one of the monologues that we did for our Uganda project, and he also helped work on the curriculum that we did in Uganda. I know he's a nerd. He researched the heck out of it, and I know he researched the heck out of this because we talked about it during the time. So there's no doubt in my mind, and Josh has a real love of the truth, oddly, and unlike many people.
But the thing you said, which I think is important, is I think the perception of Mr. Assange in this country is not necessarily a good one, and we spend a lot of time in the movie trying to really push what his strengths were, what his great vision was, and really trying to show a lot of the early wonderful leaks, the Julius Baer leak, which was where he basically took down a Swiss bank, the leak where he exposed dictators in Kenya for, extrajudicial killings. We try to really show some of the wonderful, wonderful work that WikiLeaks did early on.
And his dedication as a human rights activist.
Correct.
I mean, I did not appreciate that prior to seeing the film. I really did.
Yeah.
Well, I'm reading actually in the Guardian, and Benedict
Cumberbatch.
See what a nice host I am. I always let you say the fun words.
It's really enjoyable.
Was asked about Manning, and he said he was not convinced that the army private should be granted the presidential pardon for which Chelsea Manning has now applied. He basically said he had sympathy, but he said he took an oath and he broke that oath. He went on to say, while alarmed by the revelations of state surveillance disclosed by the whistleblower Edward Snowden, the actor admitted he was also ambivalent about disclosing secrets. He said, if they're saving lives, how can we say that's less important than civil liberties? You don't have any civil liberties if you're dead. So, interesting,
Benedict Cumberbatch has we said, he really inhaled a lot of this, which was wonderful to see. And again, it was a good reason why, we reached out to Julian, because Benedict wanted to get even more, inside the guy's head. What's interesting about that is, I think, so in terms of the Snowden leak.
Yeah.
There is some very dangerous information. I've talked to Alan Rusbridger, and I've talked to Marcel Rosenbach over at Der Spiegel, who are now currently putting out
you know, that leak, right? They are working on, you know, finding the stories in the huge data trove that Edward Snowden gave to Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald. And there is, I think there is good stories and good information and stuff that we all should know, but there's also, they've told me there's incredibly dangerous stuff in there that we would not just want out there.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think people don't realize is, so when Daniel Domscheit-Berg left WikiLeaks, he and the architect sort of made the submission platform dysfunctional. So you can't actually submit to WikiLeaks anymore online. It's one of the things few people know. And Edward Snowden has said that if WikiLeaks had still had an online submission platform, he would have sent all his information right to Julian Assange. Now, you can be a huge fan of Edward Snowden and believe that we're glad he leaked those things. Right, and at the same time, be very glad that he couldn't give them to Julian Assange, right? Because I'd much rather have that information in the hands of Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian, right, and Der Spiegel and these responsible journalists than have that information in the hands of Julian Assange.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And so,
or anybody who can just throw it up there, and I think that's the whole point, and I think your film really investigates that in a deep way and an exciting way, too, For me, that's my main problem, because you can have any whack job, have any motivation, who can get a hold of sensitive material and put people's lives at risk when you don't have somebody filtering through.
That's why we have journalists.
That's right.
Well,
exactly.
And we were talking about the whole, obviously this issue of contractors keeps coming up. They have no loyalty to the United States.
Right.
They're doing it for money.
Valerie Plame talks about that.
Yeah.
Why isn't the director of National Intelligence, Clapper, resigned? He's ultimately responsible for the safeguarding of these secrets. How do you propose to keep secrets if you have that high a contracting force? Where's their loyalty? It's not going to be
to their
country.
Paycheck, yeah.
It's going to be to the person writing their paycheck.
And you can see that, too, in the way that this has been handled. I mean, Julian Assange is hiding out. Snowden's hiding out. The first rule of civil disobedience is, if you really believe in what you're doing, you put your hands out and you get arrested because you believe in what you're doing. I mean, look what those Congress people did just yesterday, like Jan Schakowsky. They got arrested because they were standing up
Keith
for something
Ellison.
They believed in, and they're willing to take to suffer the repercussions. Mm-hmm. And I think if you just allow willy-nilly anyone to throw stuff up there and then run away from it, I have a problem with that.
Now that said, you know, again, so I agree with what you're saying, but on the same hand...
You better, because I can reach you.
You know, to me, the story of WikiLeaks is a tragedy. Because what these guys started out to do... It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. We want to be a check on government because the Fourth Estate is not doing their job because, hey, newspapers are going out of business, right? There are less investigative journalists than there used to be. Terrific. I'm glad that Julian and Daniel are going and trying to be another check on government. But then the question becomes, like, you know, are they going to be responsible with the information they're given, right? And I think at first they were, and at first they were very careful with what they put out and how they put it out there. And that evolved in a way that, you know, frankly, I'm not entirely comfortable with.
And I really, the way that the film began and that whole exploration of that was something I didn't appreciate prior to seeing the film. And I really did. And again, when you use the word balanced, usually I hear boring in my head. It equals boring. But the film is not that. So.
How could it be boring with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Do that. All right, 46 minutes after the hour. Back in the remaining moments, Josh Singer, writer of the new film, Fifth Estate. Fifth Estate and Melissa Fitzgerald, as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
I love it!
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Carbonite. All right, if you have MSNBC on in your house like wallpaper, you have seen the the ads for the Fifth Estate. Josh Singer, the writer of that very film, in studio with us, with his good friend Melissa Fitzgerald, activist extraordinaire. Both West Wing alumni. Not the actual West Wing, the TV show.
Exactly.
Correct.
Right down the street where we filmed it.
There you go. Anyway, opens next weekend. I've heard it's great. And we've been talking a lot, just interesting, about how you were saying Julian Assange, apparently, which just, I don't even know if he got the irony of him leaking a script of yours.
it's really something. Yeah, he's been involved, really, since we were in the middle of prep. We reached out to him and you know, he immediately sent, we had Benedict Cumberbatch reach out to Julian, and Julian immediately sent him a long email saying, please don't do this movie. Which, as you, we were like 2 weeks before shooting.
No.
And as you can imagine, you know, this made Mr. Cumberbatch a little anxious.
Oh, I wish I had been on that email chain.
And you know, Julian, again, I think he, you know, it's funny because he's all for transparency for the world, but not so much for himself. and which I think, you know, we want transparency for the public, for transparency for government and privacy for the individual. But, you know, Julian has now become powerful enough that perhaps he should be transparent as well. And
he's pale enough to be transparent.
He tends to lash out at anything that, you know, is not necessarily, you know, that he doesn't have control of.
Don't do this movie or I'll kick you right in the combat patch.
Exactly, exactly. And so one of the things, I think it was a good test because, you know, Benedict, you know, came back to us and said, hey, you know, how, what's fiction, what's fact, you know, and are we being fair in this script? And we actually, you know, there was a great Skype between, you know, Benedict and Bill Condon, the director, and me and Nick Davies got on Skype. Nick Davies happened to be in Los Angeles, Nick Davies being the fabulous, wonderful reporter for The Guardian, who is, you know, featured in the film. He's the guy who brought in WikiLeaks, The Guardian.
I recommend go to meeting next time.
He was part of the phone hacking scandal. Anyway, right. So you know, it was really Nick sort of, you know, talking about stuff in the script to Benedict Cumberbatch, and it really helped. I think it helped us all feel very comfortable in what we were doing the story we were telling. And, you know, these emails continued, you know, Benedict and Julian emailing, and I have word that Julian may release those as well. So.
Oh, I hope so. And I hope he doesn't edit them because he is so against the editing. So
redacting.
Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, I want to see those.
but frankly, you know, for me, you know, it's funny because we kept this, you know, the reason he has my script is because I was hacked at some point. And in fact, when I got back from Europe, it was
layers of irony.
Oh my gosh. There was scared now. I said mean stuff about Julian Assange. Now I'm going to get hacked.
Anonymous might be coming after you. You should be careful.
I've gotten emails from you. There's nothing that Julian Assange is going to care about. So.
I know. But I like to pretend there is.
So, you know, frankly, we had tried to keep this script under lock and key, and so when it went out there, I was actually kind of thrilled because no one's gotten to see the script, and now, you know, my friends were like, oh, great, I can read your script now online.
You can read it anywhere.
And Josh Singer is a very talented writer, and I loved the movie, and I'm so proud of him. So,
very kind.
So Josh Singer, Melissa Fitzgerald, obviously alumni of the television show West Wing. We've worked in every single name drop this morning. Allison Janney, Martin Sheen. I can't believe nobody has found a way to Bradley Whitford.
Well, he has a trophy wife, I hear.
All right.
There's some show, Trophy Wife. It's his new show.
Oh, is that right?
I wasn't making a joke about Brad. It's his new show.
The guy from Aerosmith?
But we started because I want to get your take before we wrap. Is just that because I was saying people are so nostalgic that the, you know, politics could actually run like that with what's happening now. I'm looking at a headline: New Powell finds Congress is worse than hemorrhoids and hipsters, but better than Miley Cyrus.
Right.
Only Miley Cyrus is less popular than Congress.
So it's interesting because I had a question at a wonderful question at a wonderful screening over at UCLA at the Landmark Region the other night, and someone said, look, when you see what government is doing now, when you see the nightmare that's in D.C., you know, should we really trust those guys more than we trust Assange, or maybe we should trust a guy like Assange? And I said, you know, look, I'm very disappointed in what's happening with the Congress now, and I'm not afraid to say I wish the Republicans would behave more like adults than like children.
Yeah, but we can vote those guys out, and we can't vote Assange out. That's the difference.
But that aside, you can be disappointed with what the Congress is doing, and you can still see that the U.S. State Department has been doing some great work. I mean, look at the progress we're making with Iran and
the NSC.
Yeah,
all of
this
them.
Is all going on. We just got, you know, another one of these terrorists. Well, no one's paying attention, right?
Correct.
Syria is disarming.
Correct. So you can you can be disappointed with the way the Congress is functioning and still think there are parts of government that are functioning very well. And so if you want to support those parts of government and perhaps are not for just tearing down those parts of government, then, you know, you don't want, you know, 250,000 State Department cables leaked willy-nilly.
right? And so I think that's the contrast. I think it's not black and white. I think it's a pretty nuanced question that we really have to, you know, engage in.
Listen, Jim and Melissa fight about this every time she's in, and he always hopes for makeup sex, and it never happens. And it's an ongoing storyline, and that's how it goes. Josh Singer, writer of the
storyline in West Wing.
And the storyline never ends. If you could write the story a different ending for them, he would be so appreciative.
Seems like too much of a challenge. I'm sure.
The Fifth Estate, written by Josh Singer. And Hot Bree, his good friend, Liz Fitzgerald, go to After Coney.
Yeah, Staging Hope. AfterConeyTheMovie.com.
There you go. All right. Cumberbatch, everybody. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Hal Sparks next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Six minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Why, it's just been a sexy liberal stampede on the show this morning. My good.
Every time I see Steph's face, it reminds me of a sexy liberal show. But all I've got is an Instagram of her job. She's half naked through the tea bagging display. I can't get used to drinking wine from a bar or snarfing it out of my nose. I want to hit to meet and go, but there's one thing I would ask to keep on.
In my peripheral vision, it's almost too much. When you...
Steffi.
Oh, what's that heavy breathing I hear? Why? Could it be? Oh. Oh, yeah. Hump Days with Hal Sparks.
Yes!
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi. P.S. I'm actually very excited to see the Fifth Estate. And we've had a...
It looks great. Have you seen the promos?
It looks terrific. Yeah. And I've been a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch since he was on Sherlock, when that series first came out.
Before he was gone.
Before he was
That's right.
The color form Star Trek script that came out, like, let's just take chunks of other movies, and you like those scenes, let's just Franken-stitch them together and call it a movie.
Color forms!
It's a reboot, or whatever.
Franken-stitch.
It's a new word. It's like Franken-movie. That's the big thing now. That's what the Superman movie was, and that kind of stuff. They kept doing that. It was like, you love that scene, let's just make that scene happen again with different characters.
Benedict Frankenbatch.
Exactly.
Frankenstitch Cumberbatch.
From really, Bandersnatch.
First of all, his name is not that weird. It's not Engelbert Humperdinck, and it's not fictional. It's his real name. Yeah. Secondly, he would have been the greatest Doctor Who ever for the full nerd.
Yeah.
I
agree.
It would have been too much. He would have cornered British television, so they wouldn't allow him. So now he's off playing Julian Assange. And again, as a megalomaniac myself, I completely understand Julian Assange probably better than some, because I speak nutcase. And the thing is, you need a certain level of self-directed, like, super ego, and not in the Freudian sense, but in the actual, like, an ego on steroids, mm-hmm. to believe in yourself enough to do the kind of things that lead to these things. It should not surprise us that the extremists among us who actually do lead us in a good direction on occasion also have a tremendous amount of social and emotional flaws and an inflated self-absorption, simply because that's what it's required. I've always said that as a stand-up, your two best friends are arrogance and stupidity, because you wouldn't have ever gotten on stage without the two of them. Later on, they'll become confidence.
But you used your superpowers for good, whereas the Herp Derp Caucus, as we call them. This is a headline I'm actually looking at. Gohmert shrugs off debt limit. Government can't default if it stays shut down.
God, what a moron.
Yeah, but Gohmert shrugging off the debt limit is like some, he's in a fifth grade math class shrugging off having to answer the question. Because that's, I mean, he's like the...
Right.
Fractions?
Yeah,
who needs that?
I'm not going to use that. My dad owns the station. I'm always going to have gas.
The president yesterday.
If reasonable Republicans want to talk about these things again, I'm ready
both
to
of them.
Up to the hill and try.
Exactly.
I'll even spring for dinner again.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to do it until... the more extreme parts of the Republican Party stop forcing John Boehner to issue threats about our economy. We can't make extortion routine as part of our democracy.
Yeah.
No, we can. We just did.
But the funny thing is, the only reason they're comfortable with doing this is because they know Democrats wouldn't do it. And it's not because of weakness. It's not because
This is already a compromise.
Right.
These spending levels were
The Ryan budget, essentially, plus sequester spending.
Right.
It's already pared down. And the continuing resolution they've already agreed to is at those base numbers. It doesn't even bump it back up to normal or even add an extra 5% in discretionary. It's simply that number again, keeping it rolling.
They keep, what did Boehner say? They're like, well, you can't, you get everything you want, and then we move forward. That's not compromise. It's like, no, you don't get to, there's nothing to compromise. You don't get to relitigate a law.
Right. I agree, Stephanie. However.
Thank you, Hal.
Yes. However, you have to realize you're talking about John Boehner, who is A, drunk the entire time he's in front of a microphone, and B, cannot actually negotiate based on he can't actually have a press conference where he actually says that. Because that's indefensible. It's the truth, but it is completely, he has to come out with this farcical, we will, not negotiating is not a way to run a government. Yeah, that's true. That's not what's happening here, but it's a true statement.
Right. Here is Mitch McConnell, your state.
Talk we should.
What is
the American people have given us divided government.
Talk we should. Talk should we.
And when you have divided government, it means you have to talk to each other.
To each other, talk
yes.
us.
Yes,
you
this
read,
is
you
true.
Read the same piece we've all read in the New York Times. This was exactly their strategy. They are on record as saying this was their. They did not talk for all this time until we got to this crisis.
6 months, put nobody on the committee to actually work out a budget.
Right.
The president's put forward a budget. The Senate's put forward a budget. The House wouldn't even appoint people to go to the budgetary conference. Mitch McConnell saying you have to talk to each other. Here's a good idea. Talk to everybody in the Republican Party in the Congress right now. Whip your votes. See how many you have and look at the number of Democrats who are going to vote for a continuing clean CR and look at how many Republicans are going to vote for a clean CR and realize there is a bipartisan majority well over the line, probably in the area of 240, that are going to vote for a clean CR.
Hmm.
That's reaching across the aisle.
Yeah. Let's go to Buddy in Columbus. You're on with Hal. Hey, Buddy.
Hey, Mama. A couple things is I want to put the real costs of this shutdown in terms. Not only is it costing us, America, $300 million a day, and plus, right now the tab's at $2.4 billion.
Yep.
On a personal level, they shut down NIH.
Mm-hmm.
My brother is alive today because of NIH. Last year, they found...
I think you're missing the important thing. The White House gym is still open. Or, excuse me, the Congressional gym is still open. That has been deemed essential.
Yeah. But, honestly, last year they found a huge tumor in him. I mean, it was big. It was multiple organs. It's called a GIST tumor. Very rare, very hard. Thankfully, it was not cancerous. But it was... They had to cut him open, resect the bowels, take everything out. There's very few people in the world who can do this. And you know who did it? NIH.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's shut down, you have people going there for treatment who can't get it.
Yeah.
And these people who wrap themselves in the flag and God and country and values, I want to vomit.
Yep.
See, my thing is that we keep coming at it from the point of view of reasonable or rational thought. And in reality, you're dealing with people who, A, think the federal government shouldn't exist at all, anything.
Oh, this is their dream.
Yeah, exactly.
They're happy about it.
And
Michelle Bachmann said, this is the happiest I've seen Republicans in a long time.
And genuinely have a cull the herd mentality.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're not strong enough to survive, if you need something like the NIH to be alive,
you don't deserve to
you're
live.
A useless eater. You're a hanger-on. You're going to cost too much. It's their own version of death panels. Arguably, this is the Republican Party instituting a death panel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're saying, we don't believe these payments should go out. We don't think this is essential. And we're going to make that decision for you. And we're not going to do it through discussion. We're going to do it through a financial coup. Because that's exactly what this is. And that should be the hashtag, financial coup. Because if they did it with tanks, they call it a coup. They're just doing it through dollars.
Yep. The president yesterday apologizing.
Well, I apologize that you have to go through this stuff every 3 months, it seems like. And Lord knows I'm tired of it.
It's like Keanu Reeves apologizing to the people on the bus in Speed for that they have to go through this.
Yeah, right.
Because it's obviously both sides.
Hey. It's the best hey in film.
Hey.
When they're arguing, they're going to, man, I got a family. Oh, and I don't, so I don't matter. Hey. It worked.
Yeah,
everybody calms down.
True.
It's amazing.
That's true.
Crowd control. You know what we need is Keanu Reeves to go down to Congress and go, hey. Right
you're
now. That would be
right.
good.
You're right. Yep.
That would bring
yep.
everyone together.
Everybody would
yep.
sit and then.
And start getting all the good people out on a skateboard.
Yeah. And
right?
then a bus would, would I guess, violate the laws of physics and jump a chasm with no ramp at going slightly above 60 miles an
that's
hour.
What
yet
the,
it's
that's
still.
What the, that's what the debt ceiling's going to look like. That's what the going to look like.
It still was able to leap, even though it didn't have a ramp.
No, was no. That's what I mean. Yeah. No ramp
only
whatsoever.
Only Sandra Bullock, either in Speed or Gravity, can help us now.
That's, well, she has control over gravity. That's what we're seeing in film.
The house IQ goes below 50 points.
If you don't do it, she'll erase your identity, like
it's
in The Net.
Blowing up, right.
Okay.
I think she had it done to her in The Net.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen,
I don't think anybody remembers The Net, Stephanie.
All right, well, I just threw in an extraneous Sandra Bullock reference. Listen, if you can't take the heat, see what I did there? Because that's another set of everything coming back to her. Okay, 17 minutes after the hour. Continue more Hump Days with Hal on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was a freak like her? It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
I get hilarious every time Hal's in because he does his Prince impression. Do it again.
That was the highest one I could do. That's the dog whistle, Prince.
He's cute. Okay. and you can see that live on stage in Sexy Liberal. Big Sexy Liberal announcement. Friday.
Oh, boy.
Friday.
Very exciting.
Woo-hoo.
Very exciting.
By the way, did you see, speaking of Prince, Chris Brown? Did you read the Chris Brown interview?
Oh, yeah. Right.
He, let's see.
No, why would
well,
I do
first
that?
First of all, he said he lost his virginity when he was 8.
Wow.
You don't you don't lose your virginity at 8. It is stolen.
It is taken
stolen.
From you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he said, let's see.
Maybe he met last night at 8.
He's 24. He doesn't want to say how many women he slept with, but he said, you know, Prince had a lot of girls back in the day. Prince was like the guy. I didn't know that. He said, I'm just that today. But most women won't have any complaints if they've been with me. Well, I can think of one.
Yeah.
they can't really complain. It's all good.
They can't really complain.
Well,
you know, like they can make it mild. They have notes.
Sure, if you punch them in the mouth.
Yeah, if you complain, you get hit.
Right.
Yeah.
But even then, like, apparently, just listening to the words he uses, again, you break down what people are saying versus what they're really saying. And if they can't really complain, that means some of them are.
Yeah.
Right.
Fairly frequently.
Or maybe some of them are not with us anymore.
Right.
Because they did complain.
We have no evidence that is the case.
Stephanie Miller Show has
P.S.
No
Prince
idea.
Can play like 22 instruments, and I'm not even sure Chris Brown can operate a drum machine without help.
He corrected her.
So, yeah, right.
I love when you do music smack talk. How was 01 at House of Blues?
Super awesome. I mean, it was really fantastic.
Cool.
Actually, it was great. We had we rolled out our flamethrower style smoke machines this show, and we had our three dancers on stage with us. And,
nice.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. Malice, Laney, and Summer, my girlfriend. So there we go. And And we were it was a party.
Wow.
It was a good time.
And a tay, a two syllable, a par and a tay.
A par,
right.
A tay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny to watch people's faces when they're not expecting me or my band or whatever, and they go, oh, let's see what this is. And like halfway through the song, you're like, oh, he's dead serious. And then halfway through the second song, you're like, this is good.
Yeah.
And by the third song, they're like, I forgot this was your band. This is just great. And it only happens in L.A.
That, okay.
You know what I mean? This is a city of musicians with their arms crossed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watching your left hand going, yeah. Is he fretting?
Oh, if you've ever done a comedy industry showcase, you know what that crowd is like.
Oh, yeah. I did 6 Aspen Comedy Festival.
Oh,
I think they only had 4 festivals. And they were all miserable experiences.
Oh, awful.
Great shows, miserable experiences.
Awful. That's what I love about Sexy Liberal. We get heckled, but it's just with love. We love you!
Yeah, quiet. I'm trying to tell jokes.
What?
This is it.
You don't... That's not a heckle.
Yeah,
take
right.
a picture of your gooter!
Yeah. Yeah, but that happens on the street, in all fairness.
Sure. Yeah, right. Well, you know.
I get that every day.
Yeah.
Wow. The writer says during the interview, Chris Brown kept his shades on, makes no eye contact, and addresses his words to the mixing desks in front of us, though less due to rudeness, I think, than the elaborate protocol of cool.
Oh,
or he's
yeah, that's
just
why
giant.
I do it. I pull a Stevie Wonder. I kind of look up at the rafters and just lean back and forth. Just for the heck of it. Just to make them feel weird. Always, there's an important thing to that. And I think we can all learn something from Chris Brown as a relatively untalented dope.
Right.
Who compares himself to Prince. The last guy who did that was a guy named Terrence Trent D'Arby.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
yes.
his second album? No, neither does anyone else.
I remember.
That there is something captivating. Here's the thing. The journalists, especially in the entertainment world, will walk into a rake every time. If you give a thoughtful, well laid out interview with someone that actually engages with your fan and tells some truths, they're not interested. But if you act like a whack job and say,
right.
I don't know, you're going to have to ask my parrot, and then not answer any other questions, they're going to go, there's sort of a magic to him. Like, it's
yeah,
it's
let me,
sad,
let me,
but true.
Let me share some of the other fun facts from the Guardian interview. He can't think of anything he's bad at.
Wow.
Rihanna can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Apart from just being able to relax and sleep. That's all he's bad at, really? Oh, community service. He said, that is a bitch. I'll be honest, you can quote me on that. That is a mother there. For me, I think it's more of a power trip for the DA.
Oh.
You know how DAs are.
Yeah.
Because you beat a woman up and
yeah.
they make you do it.
Because beating a woman
right.
isn't a power
touchy
trip.
Touchy about that.
Right.
Yeah.
He says his court-ordered 52-week program of anger management has helped him learn to keep his temper. But then he adds, I think the actual class I went to was a little bit sexist in that they think it's bad for men to beat women. It's somehow it's a little sexist against men that want to beat women, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He said, the class itself, I mean no disrespect to the class, but the class itself only tells you you're wrong.
Yeah, well, that, when you are. That's how it works,
yeah.
guy.
And if you're wrong, then...
That tells you what his life is
right
like.
Right away, like,
because
there's not two sides to
right,
me beating up a woman.
You know, right now in his life, whenever he's wrong, people don't tell him that.
Yeah.
That's what
that's
he's
true.
Telling you. Again, listen to what the person actually says. This is what the words they're using. Chris Brown, no one tells Chris Brown
he
when he's wrong.
Quotes. He uses air quotes. I guess I'm
wrong
again. To beat a woman up.
Yeah, but
fine.
That's what makes me awesome for noticing when I'm wrong. Anyways, I was right about that.
He also said of himself how, you know, whether it be personal or musical, I just think I'm a walking art piece, just a ball of creativity.
Wow.
Someone thinks
you're
very highly
of
himself, doesn't
well,
he?
At least Hal has the stuff to back it up.
Right.
Yeah.
I have the talent. I can play and sing live. Yeah, quite well, actually.
Oh,
I'm proud of it.
Finally, he says, my favorite line is, you. I like giving the world a big you. Every tattoo I
wow.
have is a big you.
Yeah, every song he writes
well,
in his own way.
Yeah.
Even if that's not the lyrical content, that's how we take it.
We return the sentiment. Yes,
right.
We do.
Yeah,
we
yeah, yeah.
Many of us,
no,
say.
No, we ignore it. And Chris Brown will be like many other third-tier R&B artists 10 years from now.
Now you have me remembering what Terrence Trent D'Arby
right.
sang.
Yeah, right.
What was that song?
Wishing Well.
Wishing
yeah.
Well! That was
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And he came out and said,
and you know, sign your name. He also said, sign your name.
Yeah. Sign your name across my heart.
Mm-hmm, right.
I want
oh.
you to be my baby.
Baby.
Okay. So after that album came out, 2 hits on it.
Yeah.
Magic number. He said, I'm more talented than Prince. And everybody in town went, excuse me. Okay, you're done. Yeah. So hopefully this is the... Never say you're better than Prince.
Yeah.
There's just... No one is allowed to say that.
Yeah.
No, sorry. As, bet, in the world of creating music.
I bet Prince had some thoughts on that when you heard that.
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah. That's from him hurting his hand, hitting Chris Brown. Do that to women. Prince knows how to treat a woman.
Pretty far, though.
Prince knows how to treat a woman. You know what I mean? And like,
yeah.
Yeah. Little reach around.
I saw how he treated Apollonia.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Rawr. Yeah. Even though he was a third her size,
exactly.
He still knew how to climb that mountain.
9 minutes after the hour, back for more Hump Days with Hal.
This is what it sounds like when doves cry. Hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh.
Stephanie Miller.
She's like a human Macarena, something everyone did at parties in 1996.
I'm all used up. 34 minutes after the hour, hump
I know
day.
This much is true.
Right. The president.
They're aware of the fact that I'm not budging when it comes to the full faith and credit of the United States. That has to be dealt with.
Why is he so intransigent? Why
would he have a conversation?
Insisting on keeping it solvent.
Why does he want to do this during a 6-month budget thing when we can't publicize off of that regular order and regular governmental business? We have to be self-important and create crises that do not need to exist so that
Sparks, yes. How do you see this playing out?
I see us going over the debt limit. I see us. I see the shutdown staying till at least then.
Yeah.
And I see the us breaching the debt limit. I think the debt limit actually is I think 2 days of the debt limit, maybe three, breach will probably be what makes everybody freak out, because the fourth day is when it'll get real.
Yeah.
They can do 3 days of see, no big deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A ship this big doesn't take on water that quickly, but when it does, it's quick. And when it starts to, it starts to go fast. And that's what's going to happen. You won't notice it at first, and then it's a heavy tank. And that's what's going to happen. And everybody knows that. Everybody on Wall Street knows that. They're like, okay, if it's within 3 days, we can tap dance around it, and we know that bills will be paid a little bit late, and there'll be penalties, and we can count on those penalties, or we can, you know, hold to contracts and insist on things. But it costs us more money as a government to run that way than it does to just go through
Ironically,
with it.
Ironically, it's going to add to our
of
debt
course it
immeasurably.
Is. Right.
I mean, it's the whole thing is...
Right. And here's the thing. One of the things that they've introduced, and they keep introducing, is this Pay China First bill, like pay our foreign debts first. Okay. But China doesn't even hold the majority of our debt. You know what does? The Social Security Trust Fund.
Yeah.
And what they want to do is skip over the Social Security Trust Fund. Don't pay it. Pay foreign debt first.
Wow.
And not pay services in that time. It's just like having a breach of the debt ceiling with all domestic related stuff to in some way pay foreign bonds as if they matter more per bond. If you buy bonds within the United States, if you're a corporation or an individual who's bought government bonds and someone else has bought them, they just happen to live in a different, you know, area code, they get paid first and you don't.
Yeah.
That's intrinsically, that imbalances the entire bond market. It's goofy.
Yeah. Governor Bobby Jindal on the president.
This president's not leading. It's his way or the highway. He simply tells the Congress, I'm not going to negotiate. I'm not going to change anything. That's not leadership.
That sounds like leadership to me.
Yeah.
It sounds like exactly that. I think.
Do you think the American people, though, Hal, get it right? Do you think they get what Jim just said, that there is nothing to negotiate?
No.
That you cannot expect the president's going to give up his. And by the way, our friend Eugene Robinson.
Any president ever to give up any bill.
He wrote a great piece. Obamacare is here. Get used to it. You know.
The president must surrender.
They're not even arguing for the repeal of Obamacare. There's like two people doing that now. Everybody else in the GOP has moved on because they know it's a non-starter. What they're now trying to make it about is this generic kind of, we're not paying our debt or our debt has gone up too much. Stuff that they were fine with, you know, the tripling of the debt under Reagan was not a big deal, but the doubling of it because we're finally paying off the bill for the Iraq and Afghanistan war, suddenly that's Obama's fault and that money shouldn't be paid out. We shouldn't breach the debt ceiling. We're not breaching the debt ceiling, P.S., because we're extending, right. you know, entitlements.
As the president said, it does not add a penny to our debt. It's
no.
not
any
entitlements. More spending.
Infrastructure.
It is paying the bills we've already, and the president yesterday.
I have flaws. Michelle will tell you. One of them is not that I'm unwilling to compromise.
Well, and the other thing they keep saying is, well, you know, that's not the way compromise works, that, you know, he gets everything he wants, and then it's like he already got it.
Yeah.
It's a law passed years ago, upheld by the Supreme Court. It's not something that he's – it's not yours to – it's not theirs to compromise on. I mean, it's like it's done.
There's a minority of the Congress that insists on this from Boehner, and he is giving it to them – because they are in a gerrymandered district, they're not going anywhere. And all the allies that he might have in the next round, if he survives himself, he doesn't do this for them, they'll make somebody else speaker.
Yeah, yeah.
So they think they're going to hold it.
Sharon in Maryland, you're on with Hal. Hey, Sharon. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to thank the previous caller, first of all, for his kind comments about NIH.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I are both NIH employees, federal government employees, my husband for 15 years and I for 10 years. I want to put a face on this because in addition to being furloughed and not knowing when we're going to get our next paycheck, my husband has esophageal cancer, and in fact, I'm at the hospital right now with him. He had surgery at the end of August to remove part of his stomach and his esophagus, and in the last month and a half, has lost close to 40 pounds. They just put him back in the hospital to put a feeding tube in, and he's going to be going home with me today. So, as anyone knows, you know, when you're facing a life-threatening illness, the worst thing that you need is stress.
Right.
And needless to say, this not having paychecks, not knowing how we're going to pay our bills, is impacting both of us greatly.
Yeah.
And I would like to, you know, stand by the president. Fortunately, we have good health insurance, but I know that there are millions of people out there that don't. And I'd like to say to Boehner and Bachman and Cruz and the rest of the right-wing radicals that are anarchists and trying to bring our government down, that they need to lead, follow, or get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hurting people. My husband is a Vietnam vet. He's worked for the federal government for 40 years. We've devoted our entire lives to this. And I'm angry. I'd be glad to leave you my contact information if anyone needs a poster child of what this is doing to the average
American. I'm so sorry about your story, and this is what infuriates me on your behalf and everybody else's behalf, is when these guys, you know, go on TV and go, this isn't hurting anybody, this isn't affecting anybody's life, this is, oh, you know, it's no big deal. And I mean, as you say, you start with 800,000 employees out of work, and you see this Republican congresswoman. Did you see her say, oh, yeah, well, the thing is, I need my paycheck. I'm not, you know, when asked, is she going to give up her paycheck?
Her gym's open. Her cafeteria is open. Her roads are completely covered because they made sure the D.C. traffic area is completely covered.
Yeah.
Like, the entire city is, they'll protect their bubble.
Exactly.
Just like the FAA shutdown aspect. Yeah. Like, get the planes in the air because they need to fly back and forth to their districts. They know, John Boehner doesn't care about anybody's job but his own. And that's what this is about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Senator Harry Reid yesterday on
this is our job to legislate. It's always been our job, always will be our job. Open the government, pay our bills, let's negotiate.
There is a permanent kind of thought form in the Republican Party, and they allow, and it gets seeped out because no one kind of fights back against it, which is this perception that all federal government are some sort of version of a lazy DMV or a post office employee.
Yeah.
And let's be really clear. DMVs are state run.
Exactly.
There's a federal overseeing dollar, but they're state run. So if you have a problem with your DMV, it's with your governor and your secretary of state and the like. But, and the post office as a federal system has been an amazingly consistent organization for a long time. It has been robbed of every resource it could possibly do, and it still gets the mail out with amazing consistency.
Yeah.
It's incredible
for
what it does.
The complexity of the system that they have to manage.
But both of them
when you think of for how many cents now can you get something across the country?
Totally.
Right?
It's absurd.
Well, I don't even know how much a stamp is.
I don't know how much a stamp is. But
here's the thing, though. All federal workers are demonized based on these two organizations, one state, one federal, but both that run pretty darn well, quite frankly. And
right.
Without them, the alternative of not being able to get regular mail or not having licensed drivers at a regular interval on the street is a maddening concept. The other organizations that are being cut federally are more crucial, more detrimental if they are not functioning. Things like FEMA, things like the DEA, like
NIH,
FBI.
With the salmonella outbreak that's going on right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Curtailing like searches for missing people to diseases that are actually moving across state lines. This is an important part of the federal government.
And I honestly
think they don't care. And because they want this to happen.
And by the way, John McCain said what we all know yesterday.
How is this going to end? We know how it's going to end. We know how it's going to end. Sooner or later, the government will resume its functions. Sooner or later, we will raise the debt limit. The question is how do we get there?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, the Republicans want, here's part of their win, and this is what I think ultimately they're going for. Mm-hmm. The longer we go with the government shutdown, and the longer we go with without a debt limit increase, the more they can create the fiction that both are not necessary. That a federal government, like, things were fine, nothing was totally destroyed, we can find ways to work without the federal government doing these things. We can find ways to shore them up. We did them individually, or we did them through state, money shoring up. Never mind the fact that system would collapse in 2 months. It doesn't matter. It creates the mythology.
Yeah, let private enterprise take over everything.
Right.
I'm sure that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to let's see, Scott in Texas. You're on with Hal. Hi, Scott. Hello.
Hello, Stephanie.
Yes. Hi, Scott.
You there?
Yes. All right. You know what? I think I'll just move on. Okay. Terry.
I was just scanning by your show, and I don't normally listen to it, but I'm an independent.
That seemed like too much work. Okay. Terry in Atlanta. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Terry.
Yes. I've been thinking about a good comparison or analogy with the Tea Party.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of their animosity and hatred for the federal government, it reminds me of the kind of hatred that Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols had for the government that led to them do what they did in Oklahoma City. Yeah. I'm not saying the Tea Party will go to that extent.
No, but you're right. It's the same kind of far-right extremist hatred of government.
Well, it really is a Turner Diaries YouTube video attitude towards the federal government.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Newsbusters is listening. And
thanks. Did you get that,
good.
Newsbusters?
Yeah.
45 minutes after the hour. Right back.
They're going to say that Stephanie Miller says Tea Partiers want to blow up America.
Isn't Newsbusters like a cartoon character from the 30s with news written across his belly or something? And
hard.
Remaining moments of the hump days with Hal on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Newsbusters is a hall of goons. There I said.
Oh my, how ruthlessly absurd.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Oh, it is an awesome thing to behold when House Park starts handling his Apple products.
Oh, yeah.
Getting his tweet ready for the big sexy liberal announcement Friday.
Because I use Hootsuite as a Twitter client, so you can program tweets. So if I have a piece of information, I can, weeks ahead of time, I can make sure it comes out right at the exact time.
50 minutes out. 50 minutes out. I just think I had a tantric something happened there.
Yep.
All right. 1-800
My tweets do that. At House Parks. I'm just saying.
All right. So we were talking about earlier the Hitler Nazi analogies with the president. Our friend Frank Bruni at the New York Times wrote a great piece entitled Nazis Lynching and Obamacare. You might think the methodical extermination of millions of Jews by a brutal regime intent on world domination would resist appropriation as an all-purpose metaphor. You might think that genocide, of all things, would be safe from conversion into a sloppy simile. You'd be wrong. Ted Cruz, as he calls him, the Senate's Prince of Tirades. See, not Prince of Tides. Prince of Tirades, okay. Compare people who claim the new insurance program can't be stopped to those who rolled over for Hitler and the Third Reich. This prompted a public reprimand from John McCain, who has developed something of a sideline career of swatting Cruz on the nose. They're like a hapless master and his hopeless dachshund. The former keeps trying to housebreak the latter, while the latter just beams at every mess he makes.
I don't know if you guys, play the bit where he was called out on the floor supporting the VA, and she's like, I just want to clarify. It was the senator from Illinois, mm-hmm. I think, called him. It was like, I just want to clarify in the middle of Mr. Cruz's remarks. So he's saying he is for the funding of the VA, a government-run government health care system with government doctors. And then he supports it, and he goes, yes, I am for the funding. I just want to be clear. I am for the funding of the VA. So I just want to clarify. The senator from Texas is saying that he supports a government-run, government-funded, single-payer medical system with government doctors. And he didn't seem to catch what she was
right.
saying.
Right. Right.
He's like, oh, she's not going to catch me in that trap. Yes, I am for the VA. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
P.S. Does everybody know Godwin's law? Does everybody know the rule that the first person to invoke Nazis in an argument loses?
Yes, loses.
You lose. I mean, the first time you go, you're a Nazi about this, it's like the Nazis.
Yeah, no, it's not.
You lose.
And that's what Frank Rooney writes. He says, you know what was just like Germany in the 1930s? Germany in the 1930s.
Right.
We're in an unfortunate place, but we'd even travel back there to describe it.
Oh, this is a dictatorship. And that's why the president has to wait for Congress to actually sign an appropriation.
Right. Yeah.
Just like every other dictatorship in the country. Yeah.
Yeah, they've used and he talks about the terrorist attacks of 9/11. Mike Pence, Indiana's Republican governor, when he was still in Congress, he summoned that day's horror to characterize the Supreme Court ruling that upheld the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
Slavery, check. Ken Cuccinelli, the cooch.
That cooch.
Yeah.
Who lost his sodomy law appeal. Very disappointed.
Right. Oh, too bad.
Yep.
Too bad, so sad.
Stick it wherever you like, everybody.
Yeah, his wife's going to go, you don't have an excuse.
Okay.
Get back at it.
That sucks ass.
Really?
Really?
Really, Jim.
Really, Jim.
Really. He really got licked, didn't he? In that
Virginia.
Waka, waka, waka.
Did you see Lawrence O'Donnell's?
Yes. Oh, my God, that was so dirty.
Virginia's for lovers.
Hot, hot.
Virginia, by the way, is for lovers. It's one of those kinds of states where I don't care what's going on in the governmental halls or in the churches. It's one of those 70s-ish swinger states where because it butts up against the Pentagon and there's a lot of people needing to, like, let off a little bit of steam.
He said butt.
Yeah.
You know what? Not my part of Virginia. Down around Hampton Roads.
No.
It's not like that.
No?
No. That's Pat Robertson country.
Again, a lot of inbreeding, a lot of cousin, bumping going on.
Cousin bumping.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's what I mean. It's like the story told and the story, conveyed is different from
and
the
Lawrence,
story that's actually
Lawrence O'Donnell is when I'm normally dozing off, but then he read the actual thing. Well, know thee by the mouth. I'm like, what now? I'm
a
what'd you say, Lawrence? What?
Huh? The mouth of what?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The cooch.
Donna in Maryland, you're on with Hal. Hey, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So listen, first off, this is your favorite travel agent, but that's another story. My husband works for, he has an organization. He's the director of Glen Echo Pottery, and Glen Echo Pottery is on a national park. So even though this organization is not funded by the park or, by the feds, the whole park is shut down, and nobody's talking about this. And there are a lot of organizations that are up and running that are in the park,
on federal lands, right?
Yes, and it's very frustrating and very upsetting. We don't get money back. Nobody's talking about this. You're talking about 800,000 people that are laid off. There's probably millions of people that are going to be affected by this.
Right, and all the people you do business with, and all the people they do business with. Right.
Exactly. By the way, I'm looking up at the TV, Hal, and they're obviously discussing the 14th Amendment. And it's funny, I was reading a piece in Salon from a former ex-GOP insider who is calling Republicans neo-Confederate insurrectionists for this shutdown.
It's a financial coup.
Right.
It's
he's
hashtag financial coup.
Mm-hmm. He is asked what is the most likely ending to this. He said, just as you said, just based on intuition, I tend to think it'll go on until sometime close to the default date. You think we're going to go over?
I think we'll go over by 3 days.
But he said, I think Obama did a horrible job in 2011 taking the invocation of the 14th Amendment off the table. The 14th Amendment states the United States will pay its debt. This is an extingent circumstance, and he can do it. Just tell the Treasury to keep rolling over the T-bills. He's in his second term. What can they do to him? Do you think it'll come to that where he's got to say, look, I can't plunge the entire world into financial...
Here's what they're hoping he does, by the way. This is how they're hoping he will bail them out of this. The Republicans are hoping that's exactly what he does, because it's... They'll just go, this is what the Democrats do. They just start printing money. They just want to run up the debt. They'll run on the fiscal irresponsibility of it when ultimately it was their fiscal irresponsibility that actually ran to it. So that's part of their goal, is to push him to that limit of it. I don't think he's going to do it. That's why he took it off the table last time. This is easy order business.
Yeah.
This is not. These guys have such an inflated sense of self that they don't think you can pay off debt over a long period of time, because there's no news in it. There's no fundraising in it. There's no red meat for the Tea Party in it. You know, I think Democrats like being bored by their government. I don't think we are big fans of it being kind of all in our face all the time or whatever. It's only when they start to limit women's right to choose or enforce a religious idea or whatever that the Democrats push back and go, we need a government interaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Republicans love to nanny state, frankly. Do you hear that, Newsbusters?
When we started Sexy Liberal, we thought we would never get more comedy binkies than, Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and whatever. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have Ted Cruz and we have a whole new parade of horribles. And so be prepared to be tweeted by Hal Sparks Friday with a big Sexy Liberal announcement.
Right.
Also, Kathleen Madigan, Suzanne Summers live tomorrow on The Big Show.
Look at that.
Hal Sparks, we love you.
Yes, I know. At Hal Sparks on the Twitter machine.
Yeah. Prepare to get tweeted by Hal Sparks.
Yes.
You don't know.
01 Nation is my band's Twitter. You can follow that as well, because we got shows coming up.
Rock on.
Awesome. Love you. See you tomorrow on The Stephanie Miller Show.